Okay, everybody. Well, I think it's 2 minutes past the hour, so we should make a start. Hello, everybody, and welcome. We have some apologies, and Christina, you have a list of those present. Can you tell us who's here and who...
Well, I can barely hear you. Can everybody else hear him?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Can you hear me, Duffy?
Okay. Christina, can you give us a list of who's present and who's apologised?
I will. From the CCNSO on the call, we have Martin Boyle, Becky Burr, Keith Davidson, Stephen Deerhockey, Eberhard Lisser, Paulus Miranda, Patricia Poblete. Nigel Roberts, Dottie Sparks-DeBlanc. And from liaisons, we have Cheryl Langdonor. And from staff support and special advisors, we have Jap Ackerhuis, Kim Davies, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernie Turcott. And apologies from Bart Buffwinkle, Christy Spain, Suzanne Riddell, and Patricia Poblete.
Okay, and any further apologies received by anybody? If not, I'll assume that that is a correct record of those present and that the apologies be accepted. We have in front of us the meeting notes from the last meeting of the 15th of March. Bernie, is there anything in particular from those minutes that isn't otherwise covered on the agenda?
I don't believe so. Fairly straightforward, I think, from what we discussed based on the transcript, so I kept it simple.
Okay. Any comments from anyone regarding those meeting notes? If not, can we consider them accepted and move on to item three on the item... I missed a step on the agenda and approval of tonight's agenda. Does anyone have any suggested changes? Is there any modifications to the agenda? If not, we'll consider the agenda approved and move on to item four on the agenda, revocation, and having a look at the first draft. And I assume people have had an opportunity to read the first draft of the revocation document, noting that there's no recommendations at this stage, but let's have a look through and see if we can agree with the general methodology that we've used here, and we can talk about possible recommendations a little later on. So, Bernie, do you want to talk us through this?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Sections 1 and 2 are rather boilerplate. 1 is cut and paste from the DRDWG recommendation. Section 2 is the same as from the other documents, so I'm not going to spend time on them unless people have specific questions at this point. I'm not hearing anything, so I'll move on. Section 3 is basically, as we usually do in these documents, highlighting the sections from, in Section 3.1 at least, RFC 1591, what we've been talking about, 3.4. The issues are stuff we've discussed. 3.1.2 is Section 3.5 of RFC 1591. The issues are stuff we've discussed. 3.2, GAC Principles 2005, relating to delegations and redelegations. I mean, there's not really anything perfectly aligned with revocation, but I did try to peel off the things that were possibly relevant. And so that's our usual Section 3. Are there any questions? All right, Section 4.
Before you go on, Bernie, I think someone joined the call just a moment ago.
That was Bill Semick.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Sorry, Benny.
Section 4, relevant procedures, starts with our usual note. These procedures are only presented for information on current practices and not considered as applicable policy statements for the FOI. The only thing that's relevant to what we're talking about in the IANA procedures that are documented online is in understanding CCTLD delegation redelegation procedures. The website's quoted there. Basically requesting confirmation from contacts. I'm sure we all know this stuff by heart, so I'm not going to go through it. Section 5 is analysis of IANA reports on redelegations. Here I've tried to keep it simple. IANA reports on redelegations do not always note or document if consent was provided by the incumbent manager or ECNTC for the transfer. In such cases, almost never explain why it is not documented. Because of this, it's difficult to obtain a clear understanding of how many redelegations are unconsented by the incumbent manager. Additionally, minutes of ICANN board meetings, which deal with the redelegation of CCTLDs, rarely document for redelegation is unconsented. This being said, there are a number of relevant cases presented in the CCNSO's DRD Working Group final paper on unconsented redelegations, which can be found at. So basically, this is rearranging of words we've all seen before and quoting the DRDWG report saying there are certainly cases that raise questions about unconsented redelegation. Any questions on Section 5?
Yeah, I've got one.
Yes, sir.
It's actually not on Section 5. Can somebody please send me this in PDF format? The RTF that I've been sent is unreadable on the computer that I'm using.
Can someone do that, or do you want me to publish that?
I'll attend to that while you continue with the document, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. Any other thing up to 5? Okay,
can
so
you make the document movable? I can't scroll back. I can't. If I want to read what happens, I can't go back.
Okay, maybe it's just a question of control, Christina.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else? Okay. Having attended to the practical minutia. We get into the issues. Summary and analysis of issues in Section 6. 6.1, there is no policy basis for a transfer, redelegation, that is not consented by the incumbent manager, an unconsented redelegation. There are documented examples in IANA reports of unconsented redelegations, such as .AE. As per the recommendations of the FOI Working Group regarding consent, there is no policy basis for the transfer of the management of a CCTLD without consent from both the incumbent and proposed manager. So I thought it was important to lay that out right up front, given the discussions we had in Costa Rica and just setting the basic understanding. Are there any questions on 6.1? All right, I'll take that as being okay. Section 6.2, and there we start having more fun. Section 3.4 of RFC 1591, only in cases where the designated manager has substantially misbehaved would the IANA step in. Substantial misbehavior in IANA stepping in. Applicability to delegated CCTLDs. 6.2.1.1, the statement, only in cases where the designated manager has substantially misbehaved would the IANA step in, would support the interpretation that this would apply to delegated CCTLDs. Nigel.
Sorry,
I don't know.
I think it's time to turn the mute off.
Yes, thank you.
Without trying to make a point in favor or against the interpretation, I don't believe that the statement that you've put, that the statement supports one particular interpretation, is correct. Designated means somebody who's been designated as about to become the manager. So if the designated manager, i.e. the manager who's been chosen but is not yet the manager, has somehow misbehaved, for example, by lying on an application, then that is grounds for stepping in. So it's equally possible to construe this in a different way to the way that you say. So I don't think the statement in itself is evidence one way for the construction that's being placed on it. Whether or not that is the true construction or not, I leave open, but I don't believe that 6211 is correct.
Okay. Well, I sort of understand your point, Nigel, but it was my understanding from Costa Rica that we agreed that 3-4 would apply to delegated domains, and this is what I was trying to do here. So if there are better suggestions to that, I'll be glad to take them. Maybe Nigel and I can work with Becky offline and come up with something that will be more palatable to everyone.
Let's listen to Eberhard first.
Didn't see Eberhard.
I don't have an issue. I actually agreed that it only applied to during the application process, but since it's so easy to behave, to run a technically decent operation and to register domain names, I will be willing to live with this.
Thank you, Eberhard.
Thanks, Eberhard. Nigel has his hand raised again. Nigel.
While I could also live with this, I think, Eberhard, you've got to be careful that you don't, by saying what you just said, open the door to an approach to other interpretations elsewhere in the document that is dangerous. Just because you and I can live with a possible interpretation doesn't mean it's the correct interpretation from what's written down. I would suggest that we are looking here to try and get an interpretation of what's written down and not to write new policy that we could live with. And I'm not making a point either way for either interpretation. I'm making a strong plea that we stick to the remit of the group, which is to interpret the existing policy on the basis of what we think it means and not on what whether we like what it means or not.
Thanks, Nigel. Eberhard.
I don't see there's any difference.
In this case, probably not, but that's not my point, as you know.
So don't interrupt me. The point is we must not come to a circular thing that we repeat ourselves and do this again and again and again. My position is, if the group interprets this to mean it means the designated manager means the manager even if he's delegated, I can go along with that. I'm not going to vote against this, to put it like this. I am, however, feeling, and I was advancing this in the past, that this only applies to the application process. But that I'm not going to be opposing a more liberal interpretation.
Okay, Bill.
Yeah, I still kind of, not just kind of, I think Nigel's point of view is important, and I think as you had proposed earlier, Keith, or maybe Bernie proposed, maybe Becky and Bernie should take another look at it.
Yep. Okay. I think that seems like the a reasonable course of action. So Bernie, Becky, and Nigel can work on some wording, and we'll re-raise that on the next call. Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you. Yes, that's fine. Assuming Becky and Nigel are okay with that.
Okay.
Yes, if I'm included to that, yes, that's perfectly fine.
Excellent. All right. 622, Iana stepping in. Given the term revocation is used in Section 3.5 of RFC 1591, it would seem clear that the interpretation of step in would seem to encompass more than simply redelegation or, sorry, I meant to write revocation there. That. Any thoughts on 6221? Okay. 6222. Many IANA reports on redelegations document significant long-term efforts by IANA in many cases where there are problems with the operation of a CCTLD. This clearly establishes the tradition of 1. Ensuring the security and stability of the Internet by IANA, the IANA contractor, and 2. The IANA contractor deploying all means at its disposal to assist in resolving issues with incumbent operators, subject to FOI working group recommendations to prevent documented issues. And if that's not clear, what we're talking about is making sure we're in line with the other recommendations of the FOI working group, which I agree can be written better now that I reread it right now. So, 6222. I see no hands. I hear no calls. All right. 6223. Given the only formal mechanism available to the IANA contractor for dealing with CCTLDs are delegation, transfer, and revocation, and that the only ones which can apply to a delegated CCTLD are transfer and revocation, it would seem reasonable that IANA stepping in would include these options. If the incumbent manager is unwilling or unable to provide consent for a transfer, the only formal mechanism left to the IANA contractor is revocation. 6223, I see Nigel.
Before handing over to Nigel, can I ask Nigel...
It's taking its time to unmute.
Oh, okay. Can I ask you if you received the PDF too, Nigel?
Let's have a look. I can actually scroll up and down with what's on the screen, so that's actually helpful. Let me have a quick look and download that. While I'm downloading email, 6.2.2.3 I think is a little... should we say it's conflating two things? I'm not sure I disagree with it. In fact, I'm pretty sure I don't disagree with it. But
that almost means that you agree with it, although you may not be happy with the way it's phrased.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
You've got transfer and revocation. I also think that IANA stepping in is more than just transfer with consent or revocation.
Oh, I think I'm making that point later on. I'm just saying those two
options. I'd like to see that point made first.
Okay. Well, I don't have an issue with that. You know how it is when you write these things on a first cut. I mean, if you're dealing with it later on, sometimes you don't think about shutting it in. But, yes, certainly. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Continue, Bernie. Oh, sorry, Bill Sinich has just raised his hand. Bill.
If you're speaking, Bill, you're on mute.
There I am. Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking to myself. I'm a little confused by 6.223. I do think there are two issues here that could and perhaps should be separated. One has to do with the formal mechanisms, blah, 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 and the other has to do with the unwilling or unable. On the issue of the formal mechanisms includes, I hadn't thought that we had all agreed that stepping in included revocation. It includes lots more, as you mentioned, in 6224, solving problems, fixing things up. But I'm not sure we had specifically said, oh, and by the way, if none of this works, revocation is an option. Now, I'm not saying I disagree with that being an option. I'm just saying it's not something I recall us having actually discussed as a group and coming to a conclusion on. And then the second issue is, I recall that when we discussed that if the incumbent manager could not, was unable to provide consent, that could be the reverse, that it would in fact not be consent. Unwilling is one thing, although even unwilling, I think we decided, does not include consent. It would seem to me that if someone is unwilling to say okay, that means they're not saying okay.
I don't think anyone's arguing that point, though.
Well, if you say if the incumbent manager is unwilling to consent for a transfer, the only formal mechanism left to the IANA contractor is revocation. Are you saying that means the IANA contractor should move to revocation, or are you saying that the IANA contractor can do nothing?
I'm not saying either. All I'm saying is that if it's a delegated domain, there are two possibilities. There's transfer and revocation. And if there is no consent from the incumbent, then it cannot be a transfer. This is what we all agreed to and what we started with in 6.1. Therefore, the only formal mechanism left, if there are issues, is a revocation. Now, if your concern is that it, I'm not stating it as there's a process around those things, which I think I try and describe in great detail later on, I can certainly accept that, and we can try and clarify that.
Well, I would say the formal mechanisms left to IANA are to do nothing, or in the event of a showing of whatever it's, the language says that causes a revocation, serious, what is the word? One serious misbehavior and the other is generally screwing up.
Substantial misbehavior.
Sorry?
Substantial misbehavior.
Substantial misbehavior is the one for revocation?
Substantial misbehavior is the clause in 3.5 of RFC 1591, and it was my understanding from Costa Rica that we agreed that the very last resort, but still an option for the IANA contractor, is revocation.
So in this particular section, we're specifically only referring to the process of stepping in under the substantial misbehavior section of 3.5.
3.4, yes, that is correct.
Yes, 3.4, okay. So in this case, now I lost my place. Where is it? So incumbent manager is unwilling or unable. So in the event IANA steps in, we are saying they can do all the things in 6.2.2.4, which is try and deploy all the means at its exposure and so on and so forth. Correct.
Exactly.
But then we're also saying if the incumbent manager is unwilling or unable to provide consent for a transfer, why would there be a transfer under substantial misbehavior and stepping in?
There is no transfer. There could be a revocation.
So why do we even mention that in this context? I'm just a little confused about what's going on in the 6.2.2.3. How many things we're throwing into this bag?
Okay. Well, I'm confused by your point, but I'll try and walk through it. The only formal mechanisms available to the IANA contractor are, for CCPLDs, as far as I know, are delegation, redelegation slash what we call now transfer, and revocation, which is the point of this document. Those are the only three things that are the formal things the IANA contractor can do with respect to CCTLDs, as far as I know.
Unless we, as perhaps Nigel would call, make policy and
do that, Mr.
interpret, yeah, and say things like resolve the problem.
Well, I think that was the point of 6.2.2, saying that, you know, there is a history of IANA working with CCTLDs, and we're trying to set up 6.2.2.4 that really we're not talking about making any kind of policy. So 6223 talks about, again, we're not making policy. There have always only been three things which the IANA contractor can do with respect to CCTLDs apart from housekeeping and management issues, and that is delegate one, transfer one, and revoke one. That's the only thing, as far as I know, that's covered in RFC 1591.
So
unless
what we're saying is stepping in only includes these three things.
Yeah.
We may have some clarifications with a number of people who've had their hands raised for a little while, so with a view to any or all of the three with their hands raised being able to clarify. We have
Becky, let's move on.
Yeah, Becky, then Eberhardt, then Nigel. So, Becky.
Actually, I think Nigel should go first, and then I'll go after that.
Okay, Nigel.
I'm fine with
Becky, thank you for giving me the floor. It sounds like we're colluding, which we're not. I think you're just reading my mind. There are three things that IANA can do, but only one of those three things comes under the heading of stepping in. Transfer is not stepping in my opinion. And I think 6223 is confused and really needs to be teased out in much more simple language, maybe set into three different paragraphs or something. The issue is this. IANA stepping in is revocation is a subset. It's included in the set of stepping in, which is the formal thing it can do that's stepping in. But there are other things, such as picking up the phone and saying, fix your name servers, which are not in any of the three. But transfer has got nothing to do with IANA. IANA merely executes a transfer.
Well, to a certain extent, IANA only executes the delegation also. But first cut, what I'm getting from this is we're not arguing on the core content. We're arguing the way it's presented. And I think I've taken on some of the information, and I absolutely have no problem rewriting it to making it clearer. Al? Eberhardt?
That's got a hands up from tick from Nigel. So.
Becky was actually first.
So
yeah.
I do think this is a form issue, not a. I understand Nigel's point. I think that this needs a little redrafting.
Okay, thanks, Becky and Eberhardt.
I have a little problem with 6223, unwilling or unable. Unable is not substantial misbehavior. If it's incommunicado, that's not substantial misbehavior. I think we should look at that when we redraft this.
Okay. Thanks, Eberhardt. Nigel had his hand up, but it's...
And just to be clear for Eberhardt, I was not stating that was the case, and that's part of the redrafting problem. I agree.
Okay, and Becky now has her hand raised. Becky.
Well, I'm sorry. I was meaning to take my hand down, not put it up.
Okay. I've noted an action point that 6.2.2.3 needs some further drafting work, and I guess on the basis of 6.2.1.1, if we have the same subgroup of Nigel, Becky, and Bernie working on that, that would probably be reasonably appropriate. Nigel. You have your hand raised, Nigel. You're muted.
I'm not hearing you when I'm pressing the *7 buttons and so on. I'm just getting ahead of the game for point 4 and point 5.
Okay. Okay, Bernie. Bernie, you're still on mute.
While he catches up, I'll make my point because it's quick.
Okay. Go for it.
I would like to see the word intent in 4 and 5 replaced with purpose. I'm not... I think reading intent is, unless we've got something written down saying what John thought at the time, is akin to crystal ball gazing, but I think we both know what the purpose of 1591 was.
Yeah.
If Vicky has no problems with that, I don't have a problem with that.
I'm okay with that.
All right.
Reasonable. Phil Simich has his hand raised, so Bill.
Well, since we're suddenly talking about 6, 2, 2, 4, and 5, without having Bernie read it, and maybe you don't have to read it now, Bernie, there is a typo or a small editorial issue. The FOIG believes it is consistent with the, as we may say, purpose of RFC 1591 to interpret IANA stepping in as the IANA contractor continued, that should be continuing, with the traditions of.
Thank you, excellent. Noted.
Thanks, Bill. Okay, Bernie.
All right, 624, which we've already dissected to some part. with the changes, now we'll read. The FOI Working Group believes it is consistent with the purpose of RFC 1591 to interpret IANA stepping in as the IANA contractor continuing with the traditions of, one, ensuring the security and stability of the Internet and the CCTLD, and two, deploying all means at its disposal to assist in resolving issues with incumbent operators. Do we have other comments on 6224?
Doesn't appear to be.
All right. 6225. The FOI Working Group also believes it is...
Oh, actually, sorry. I had thought we had made the decision to expunge the word operator in all our documents.
Manager,
do I misremember?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's supposed to be manager. Apologies.
I see Nigel has his hand raised. Nigel.
Yeah, I'm on 5, where we're talking about, where we mentioned the IANA contractor.
We're not there yet.
All right, well, I want to talk to you about it when we get there.
Okay. Let's close off 4. Anything else on 4? We replace incumbent operators with incumbent managers, quite correctly. All right, 6225, the FOI Working Group also believes it is consistent with the now called purpose of RFC 1591 to state that revocation should be a last resort option for the IANA contractor. Nigel.
Okay, I'm going to offer an alternative and hopefully that will find favor. The FOI also believes it's consistent with the purpose of RFC 1591, so that's not changed. 2, interpret the existing policy in such a way that revocation is a last resort option. The reason behind my proposed change is that whether you believe we should use the word IANA contractor or not, and we probably should, I don't think it adds anything to name it. And to be perfectly honest, we want to look at this in a broad brush approach. There's some doubt over whether ICANN might be the IANA contractor in 6 months' time. There's some doubt whether the IANA contractor on its own has any power to do anything except write a report for the U.S. government to make a decision on. I'd kind of not like to add these things in unless there's a real reason that phrase is there. Just simply mentioning it's there because we know that's who does, you know, probably would do it. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense to me. Anyway, Nigel, and I agree that the point that that 6.2.2.5 is making is that revocation should be the last resort, and it doesn't matter who's executing that or when. So point well made, and I think we can probably accommodate some change of text similar to what you said. Thanks, Nigel. I see Stephen has his hand raised. So, Stephen.
I just wanted to concur with Nigel's restatement of that.
Okay, thanks, Stephen.
And I have no problems with that, too. I think I've noted it, so I'll try to get that in there properly.
Okay, continue, Bernie.
So that concludes Section 2.2. Moving on to Section 6.2.3, Substantial Misbehavior. All right. Section 3.5 of RFC 1591, not trying to confuse everyone, but follow through with me here. We are talking about Section 3.4 in 6.2, but I'm referring to Section 3.5 in 6.2.3.1. Deals with the requirements of the manager to do a satisfactory job operating the DNS service for the domain. It would then seem logical that the substantial misbehavior referred to in Section 3.4 of RFC 1591 would target non-DNS related issues. So what I'm trying to say here is satisfactory job of operating the DNS and methods for dealing with that are covered in 3.5, and I believe that what we're talking about in 3.4 are things that are not covered by that. Thoughts, questions, comments?
I think Nigel's indicating that he disagrees with that and has his hand raised. So, Nigel.
Okay, I believe I'm already not on mute. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Good. First of all, and to put it in a trite manner, if you give me half an hour, I can think of half a dozen ways of substantially misbehaving with the DNS. So I don't agree with the premise of 6.2.3.1 that it would seem to target non-DNS-related issues. I think it's neutral as to whether it targets DNS-related issues or not. What it targets is misbehavior of any kind, and misbehavior that's of a quantum that is substantial. So I think 6.2.3.1, although I see what you're trying to say, and again, perhaps we all know what we're talking about, but I just think it doesn't help and it doesn't add anything.
So perhaps referring to substantial misbehavior, referring to not just the DNS, would be more appropriate? Is that what you're suggesting, Nigel?
I just don't think it. I think you don't need when you've got a phrase of substantial misbehavior, you don't mean if you say substantial misbehavior is misbehavior that is substantial, and it includes DNS and non-DNS, doesn't help. It doesn't add anything. It just means substantial misbehavior of any kind.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you, Nigel, we're just talking about striking 6.2.3.1.
That's my proposal. I think it's OTOs, and I think it confuses.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm not strongly attached to that.
Yep. And I think I can appreciate where Nigel's coming from. And just looking at the list, I think Martin's also indicating, and Cheryl also are in fairly strong agreement, and Bill. So I think we can take it as read that we'll need to do some modifying of text there to reflect that.
What I take away from that is 6.2.3.1 is being struck.
Please continue. Nigel, do you have your hand re-raised? I've put his hand down, so...
Okay.
Okay, please continue, Benny.
6.2.32, the only other requirements prescribed for the manager in RFC 1591 are Section 3 of RFC 1591. The major concern in selecting a designated manager for a domain is that it be able to carry out the necessary responsibilities and have the ability to do an equitable, just, honest, and competent job. I'm just going to go through these because these are just quotes from RFC 1591. Section 3.1 of RFC 1591, the key requirement is that for each domain there be a designated manager for supervising that domain's namespace. In the case of top-level domains that are country codes, this means that there is a manager that supervises the domain names and operates the domain name system in that country. 62.3.23. The manager must, of course, be on the Internet. There must be Internet protocol IP connectivity to the name servers and email connectivity to the management and staff of the manager. 62.3.24. There must be an administrative contact and a technical contact for each domain. For top-level domains that are country codes, at least the administrative contact must reside in the country. 62.325, Section 3.2 of RFC 1591. These designated authorities are trustees for the delegated domain and have a duty to serve the community. The designated manager is the trustee of the top-level domain for both the nation, in the case of a country code, and the global Internet community. Section 3.3, RFC 1591, under point 62.326, the designated manager must be equitable to all groups in the domain name that request domain names. So basically, these are the non-DNS-related things I could identify as requirements from the manager in RFC 1591.
And I think Nigel has his hand raised. So,
yeah, and the reason I've got my hand raised is I think we've missed a very clear exposition of what we're looking for here by taking 6.2.3.2.1, running out of breath, and looking at its mirror image. That's the definition of misbehavior. If somebody does an inequitable, unjust, dishonest, or incompetent job, that's misbehavior, perhaps.
Well, I'm not trying to define misbehavior in this section. I'm trying to identify the sections that might help us define misbehavior and significant misbehavior. So I think I'm in line with you.
I'm not saying we should change any of 6.3.2.1. What I'm saying is that when we get down, let's see, where do we get to when we get to the end of that? Before, maybe after the summary of requirements, before the analysis of requirements, we simply say somewhere in there that
Nigel,
misbehavior might lie.
Nigel, as usual, you're way ahead of everyone, so give me a chance to catch up here. Let's finish 6.2.3.2. Are there any other points on 6.2.32 and its subpoints?
Doesn't appear to be.
Excellent. Okay, 6.2.33. So what I've done here is basically try and summarize the points brought up in 6.2.32, i.e., as far as just core requirements. A designated manager for a domain is that it be able to carry out the necessary responsibilities and have the ability to do an equitable, just, honest, and competent job. Operate the domain name system in that country. Email connectivity to the manager and staff of the manager. There must be an administrative contact and a technical contact for each domain. For top-level domains that are country codes, at least the administrative contact must reside in the country involved. The designated authorities are trustees for the delegated domain and have a duty to serve the community. The designated manager is the trustee of the top-level domain for both the nation, in the case of the country code, and the global Internet community. And finally, the designated manager must be equitable to all groups in the domain that request domain names. So I don't know if there are questions. I thought it was just a question of trying to compact those so we're looking at the key points. Anything on 6.2.33 and its subpoints? David.
With regards to 6.2.3.3.4, with requirements of the administrative contact at least must be in country, what do you believe the interpretation is if, due to evolving health issues, the current designated administrative contact is unable to continue to reside in country?
I'm not talking about
the health care.
I'm just resuming what the requirements are. And
you're just rephrasing what's in 15.
Exactly. That's what I said, and I'm not trying to analyze them in this point.
Okay.
And Martin also has his hand raised. So, Martin.
Thanks for that. 62333 appears to put a slightly narrower interpretation than comes from 62323, which specifically includes the name servers. Is there any reason for that?
Yes, the way the section 6.2.3 was originally structured, we were talking of, I was trying to make the point that we're trying to deal with non-DNS related issues, so that was the reason we're going there. Depending on how we restructure, I may broaden that point, as you were saying. Does that answer your question, Martin?
I think Martin's back.
Yeah, it's fine, thanks.
Oh.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I don't see or hear anything else, so let's dive into 62.34, the analysis of requirements. 62.341, the designated manager for domain, is that it be able to carry out the necessary responsibilities and And a logical requirement that the manager must exist and be able to carry out its responsibilities. I tried to keep it simple. Thoughts, and we'll take these one by one since now we're into interpretation land. So, 623411, Eberhard.
Interpretation side, I would like to have the ability to do take this off. He must not be able to be honest. He must be honest, as far as I'm concerned, and so on.
I'm sorry, Eberhard. I didn't quite understand the point you're trying to make.
In the interpretation, in the analysis, you say the manager must have the ability to be honest. I believe that he must be honest, not just be able to be honest.
Oh, I see. In 6.2.3.4.1, you're saying the last piece says, and have the ability to do an equitable, just, honest, and competent job. And you're suggesting it shouldn't be the ability to, but must be able to do an equitable, just, honest, and competent job.
No, he's saying be honest, but I think if I go back to the original text that we're quoting in Section 3 of RFC 1591, is the major concern. So right now I'm reading from 62321. The major concern in selecting a designated manager for a domain is that it be able to carry out the necessary responsibilities and have the ability to do an equitable, just, honest, and competent job. So I was trying to match up to that and not rewrite. So
that's a direct quote.
I'll look at it, but I think it might be, I might be unable to fit Eberhard's point, although I think I understand it quite well.
Yes. Okay, Martin and Nigel both have their hands raised, so maybe points of clarification. Firstly, Martin.
Thanks. I fully agree with Eberhard. Most people can have the ability to do equitable, just, honest, and competent jobs. The requirement has to be that they are actually doing it. Otherwise, it just doesn't seem to me to make any sense. I can do an honest job, but if I'm actually not doing the honest job, then I'm not actually meeting the requirements that are sitting in the document.
Okay. It sounds not unreasonable, I think, Martin and Nigel.
Yeah, well, first of all, I agree with Martin and I agree with Eberhard. But this choice of phrase, be able to do a just, equitable, honest job, have the ability to do just, equitable, and honest job, is actually pointing to something by way of interpretation of this document, which is that these requirements are to be applied at the choice of manager time, because the implication is that there will be a requirement to be just, equitable, honest, and competent, but the requirements are being applied before they're actually doing the job. So a prerequisite to doing a just, able, constant, and honest job is that you're able to do that. So this is actually pointing to the other interpretation, that all these requirements apply pre-delegation time. Otherwise, these tenses wouldn't be being used.
Okay, that makes some sense too. That further clouds the issue. Thank you, Nigel. Bill has his hand raised, and then Eberhard. So firstly, Bill.
Yeah, this sort of brings us back to my previous concerns about mixing the IANA stepping in concept with the revocation concept and misbehavior. It's conceivable that misbehavior would be, for example, an incorrect showing of the admin contact being in the country, or an incorrect showing of being able to be equitable, just, and honest, or an incorrect showing of several other things. As Nigel points out, the language here is targeted to the decision-making process of assigning or delegating the domain name, and not to finding misbehavior after the fact. It's just an observation. So it's possible we need to go back to the drawing board on some of this.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. Eberhard.
I think Nigel's point is quite correct. At selection time, one should look for people who have the ability to do this. But at serious misbehavior time, equitable, just, honest, and competent GM will count as the opposite of misbehavior. So at operation time, it doesn't make sense. You have the ability, but don't do it. At selection time, it makes sense to say you have the ability. Yeah. So maybe we should figure out a way to split this.
Okay. Yep. Point well made. And Becky, your hand is raised. Becky.
This is the point that we always get to here, and normally I try to assume that John was acting with, you know, specific intention in choosing particular words, but I think that the language, the equitable, just, honest, and competent stuff, does come up in the context of the selection. But although 1, 2, 3, and 4 below are not exactly parallel to that, they do sort of sound in that. So I understand why we want to sort of, sort of pull this apart, but, I mean, it seems to me that what we've got is, in the heading, a description of what you would choose somebody for, and then an explanation in 1, 2, 3, and 4, or 1, 2, and 3, about the, what all that, why they need to be just, honest, and equitable, and competent. I just think that the we're parsing this in a way that's going to make this a document that's very hard to be useful.
Okay. Thanks, Becky. Nigel, is your hand re-raised or did you just not put it down? If it is re-raised, oh, no, thank you. Martin.
Thanks. I must admit, I actually do have an awful lot of difficulty in separating in my mind why you would have a set of criteria for choosing your operator and then not consider criteria with Key when he became your operator. It just, again, it doesn't make sense to me. You've chosen the person to be able to do the equitable, just, honest and competent job. But at that point, you stop. Now, certainly, Becky's point that then that which follows helps you interpret what equitable, just, honest and competent job really mean. But I have no really clear identification in anything that follows that picks up on words like just and honest and competent. So I do see a value in that 2341 paragraph of actually reminding everybody and underlying that those four qualities are actually important qualities for the definition of the job, and in particular then subsequently helping us interpret whether something is a substantial misbehavior or not.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Nigel.
Did you call me?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I can't hear when I'm pressing the mute off button, so I was trying to do it in advance and didn't hear your call. I agree with Martin, and in fact that refers to what I said on the chat a couple of minutes ago. The ongoing requirement is implicit in the purpose of the policy. However, it's perfectly possible for me to say, I'm going to give away my car, I'm going to give away a piece of property. I want to choose somebody who'll treat it right. Once you've given away the property, you can't, or you don't want, any further day-to-day minutiae, but you can say perhaps, but if you don't want it anymore, you have to give it back to me. And these are the kind of analogies that could potentially apply. But I don't want to get too deep into it, because it's becoming very clear that irrespective of what happens post-delegation, RFC 1591 expects us all to do a competent job. And I think that's what we can take out of it. We are actually getting to what I call the purpose of the document, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, setting a level of expectation, in other words. Okay, well, can we continue with the document with a question mark around 2.3.4.1? So rather than assigning it to rewording, just put a question mark around it at this stage. Okay, Bernie.
Question mark, okay. Well, all right.
Or to put that in Martin's terms, we could square bracket.
yes, correct. Yeah, the text will now be in square bracket. 62342, operate the domain name system in that country. Subpoint 1. One must remember that RFC 1591 was published in 94 and that there were few registry service providers at that time. I'm going to go through the argumentation and then we'll take questions. Unless it's urgent, Martin?
Yeah, it was actually to do with 411.
Okay.
And really it's just a question that 411 is being, in my terms, square bracketed in the same way as 1.
Okay.
Well, it's a question. Is it actually being?
I think there's no reason why it shouldn't be. Bracketed likewise, because you can't have it without the first part of 2.3.4.1.
Well, it does actually lead me to an additional question, in that we have earlier in all these discussions identified the fact that a manager might be derelict. In other words, he no longer exists, and this would actually then seem to go against that, and it's actually been one of my concerns that somebody wanting to correct a circumstance where, for example, the company that was running it has gone under, and the new operating company has taken it on, but has to go through a full revocation and delegation process to arrange for the transfer, because there is no longer any designated manager.
I see. So you're suggesting, if I read that rightly, Martin, that the clause needs to stand in its own right, in terms of the manager must exist.
Well, I think there's an underlying and bigger question. In that the logical requirement that the manager must exist isn't actually logically perfectly correct. As far as IANA the records are concerned, it might actually be the old manager that is listed, and that old manager no longer needs to exist. In other words, that might be a reason why you've not had an answer from him.
Okay. Thanks, Martin. Nigel?
Well, I agree with Martin, but again, I think 623411 is OTOS and should be deleted. This is not interpretation of the policy. This is setting out, if you like, implementation detail. It's self-evident that a designated manager can't do an equitable, just, honest and competent job if it doesn't exist. I think we're in danger of confusing the document by putting stuff like this in.
Okay. Let's keep the square brackets around all of 6.2.3.4.1 and continue with the document in the interim.
Can I offer the expression an inevitable consequence rather than logical requirement? Or something along those lines.
Okay.
It's a consequence, not a requirement.
Yeah. It's a consequence. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Nigel. Shall we continue, Bernie?
Sir, just writing down these words of wisdom here, and we will move on to 6342, unless there are other questions.
Well, I think Martin. Signifying disagreement with the wording of consequence anyway. So let's just keep all of that square bracketed. And
yeah, we can circulate that on the list and it's great fun beating up on it.
It just doesn't respond to my initial concern in that somebody might be doing quite a competent, equitable, just and all the other a satisfactory job. It's not just not the person who's listed in the IANA contract. I think actually just needs to be noted and thought about rather than just being left as a loose end.
Thanks, Martin. And yeah, certainly there's some hangover instances in reality of those exact circumstances in the IANA database. So, okay, Bernie, please continue.
Thank you, sir. 62342 operates a domain name system in that country. Subpoint 1, one must remember that RSA 1591 was published in 94 and that there were few registry service providers at that time. As I said, I'll run through these and then we can beat up on all of 62342. Currently, there are a number of CCTLD registries which use registry service providers to operate their registries. In many of these cases, these are not based in the country or territory associated with the CCTLD. Such providers usually offer excellent services, which would be difficult or impossible to replicate in some countries or territories. As such, it would seem impractical to interpret this requirement as applying to the technical operations of a CCTLD registry. It would seem reasonable to interpret this requirement as mandating that registry services be available to the inhabitants of the country or territory respecting local languages, currency, culture, and law. It would also be reasonable to interpret this requirement as mandating that the management control of the registry as well as the policy development for the registry be carried out in the country or territory associated with the CCTLD. All right, that's all of 62342. So let's take on the questions.
Okay, firstly we've got Nigel and then Bill. So firstly, Nigel.
Hi, I've got a point which relates to point subpoint 2. But then my point about the whole may clear the whole thing. So let me just pick up on the argument I've got with point 2. First of all, I think the second sentence, no, third sentence, the one that starts such, is simply untrue. And I think that this is getting along the lines of saying you can't run a competent CCTLD registry unless you're Affilias, Neustar, or VeriSign. We're getting towards this cartel implication here, and I find that a little bit distasteful. It's perfectly possible to operate using one of several open source registries, such as FRED or COCA, in country, if that's the desire. I've got a bit of a problem with that. But let's just go to.
Nice.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
There's a proviso word there, replicate in some countries or territories. I don't think it's indicating that it applies in all countries and territories. So.
Even though it says some, if you've got internet connectivity, you pretty much could. But let's not debate that, because when we go to the overriding expression, operates the domain name system in that country, I think that the interpretation that Bernie's placed on it is not the interpretation that was intended. And I have to say, again, we dealt with RFC 1591 15 years ago and understood it a certain way, and trying to interpret it in this way now would appear not to be the same way that I originally understood it. In that country is perhaps better said as in that domain. So in other words, it operates the domain name system for the country or territory. It's foreseen in RFC 1591 that you might have proxy service. It's actually explicitly stated elsewhere in the document. So it doesn't mean you have to operate the domain name system in the country, in the physical territory of the country. What it means is in the country, as in for the country and its people and so on. And I know that's kind of easy to interpret it now, to say that you have to have the registry inside the country. But if you look elsewhere in 1591, it's contradicted. Mm. So I think it means for the country.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Nigel. Bill?
I think... You've done a great job trying to figure out what this means, Bernie, but I have to feel that you've loaded several tons of steel on the back of a very weak mule. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9 words and we have several paragraphs interpreting these 9 words, I would strongly recommend that we not interpret this particular phrase and just leave it exactly as it stands. The domain name system is not a registry, and certainly back then it wasn't really a registry the way we think of it now. And the domain name system does not necessarily have to be for that particular ccTLD. It may be, and I'm saying we can't read John's mind now, it may be that he's saying, well, there has to be a domain name system in this country in order for them to be able to access these TLDs that they're registering, so you need to run a domain name system. It doesn't mean any more than that on the bald face of it. So I really think we should just let this sentence lie and leave it as it is and not have any subsections.
Okay, that's a valid point of view. I think it's part of that issue is the complexity of 1591 reference to act in the best interests of that country and the global internet community or whatever that particular phrase is. Anyway, I see more hands up. Paulos first and then Martin. So Paulos.
Thank you, Keith. I'm also not happy with the subsections in this, and I seem to agree with Bill that probably we should let that short statement be as it is and not include these subsections. I'm not sure what reasonable to interpret really means in these sections. I'm not really comfortable with the section.
Okay, thanks, Paulos. Martin.
Thanks. Yes, similarly, I have a bit of difficulty in trying to cope with quite so many long paragraphs on quite so few words. And part of that, I think, is that we've got one small collection of words that then doesn't immediately pick up on some of the things in the same section. And I wonder whether that might help us identify a collection of things that we can draw from this in such a way that it is clear in our minds that we understand what the operating the domain name system in that country really means. For example, all the bits about where should it reside? The third paragraph of clause one actually does indicate quite clearly that the operator might actually not be in country. Because it then says that the administrative contact must reside in the country involved, which would imply that anybody else involved in it might well not. So I think perhaps if we get rid of the things that are clearly not necessary to go into detail about, and then think very hard about those things, where it is important as being perhaps a way of moving forward. So, for example, under 2.3, we've got a sort of a list of things that we might actually include. I'm not sure I saw many of those, but the one thing that does strike me is that answerable in law in the country or the territory you're working in perhaps is the sort of fundamental part of what this thing is actually trying to say when it's operating the domain name systems in that country.
Okay. Thanks, Martin. Very good suggestion of a possibility of inclusion of some of the intent. Firstly, there's Nigel, then Becky. So, Nigel. Nigel, you are not audible.
Let me try again. I think the explication of 62342 is one sentence or one paragraph, and the subpoints 1, 2, 3, and 4 should all go. And I think the explication goes something along the lines of makes the relevant TLD work.
Okay, that's one way of looking at it. Thanks, Nigel. Becky?
I just wanted to clarify, see if I could get a clarification from Martin. Were you suggesting that this be interpreted to say that, I mean, that the TLD has to be operated from within the country, that that's what operates the domain name system in that country means?
Not wanting to put words.
No, in fact.
Okay, good, because I was very confused by that.
Right, well, sorry for perhaps not being as clear as I would have liked to have been. My point is that we have only one condition in that three paragraphs under one, which indicates what needs to be done in the country. And that's the bit that says at least the administrative contact must reside in the country involved. And then the only sort of conclusion that I would have from that is that by insisting that the administrative contact should be in country, that they are then subject to the local law, the law of that country. But apart from that, you know, that was the only inference I felt able to draw, and I assume that other people might not actually necessarily agree with me on that.
Thanks. Benny, I'm assuming that Nigel and Becky have both not taken their hands down, and so Benny, back to you.
Thank you, sir. So that would conclude 62342, and my takeaway from that, as we say, is that the whole thing's in square brackets, and we've got to do some more work on it. So, moving on to 62343, email connectivity to the management and staff of the manager, with the caveat that this line may be affected depending if we include the DNS stuff or not, as mentioned by Martin earlier. IANA must be able to contact the manager via email, is what I said. So, questions, thoughts, comments? Okay. That one sounds like it's a keeper. 62344. There must be an administrative contact and a technical contact for each domain. For top-level domains that are country codes, at least the administrative contact must reside in the country involved. Nigel, you've got your hand up before I'm finished, but let's go with it. And we can't hear
I you. Think the same principle applies to this section as applies to the previous one. We're going into too much detail here. There must be an administrative contact. That's what it means. There must be a technical contact. That's what it means. The AC must be in the country or territory concerned. There's nothing more to it than that.
Okay. Any other points? Bill agrees. Okay. Nigel, are you have another point, or your hand is still up? Okay, so basically what we've got on 623443 is that we're saying just a straight interpretation of this because we've gone into too much detail, and that's it. Let us think about that, and we'll put that in a similar kind of context to not the previous point, but the point before that when we were talking about operating in country is what I'm taking away from that. Okay, I think we're okay with that. 62345, the designated authorities are trustees of the delegated domain and have a duty to serve the community. The designated manager is the trustee of the top-level domain for both the nation, in the case of a country code, and the global internet community. As noted in the FOI Working Group on Consent in RFC 1591, the term trustee is used to describe the manager's duty to serve the community and not describe specific legal relationship of the manager to the delegated domain. So that's published and accepted. The manager must provide mechanisms to allow for registrants and significantly interested parties to provide input to the manager. Being a trustee for the global internet community should be interpreted as ensuring the security and stability of the CCTLD as part of the global internet and working with the IAN, a contract manager, to ensure this. Thoughts, questions, comments?
I think we've got Nigel and then Bill, so firstly Nigel.
I'm getting confused by this section now, Bernie, I have to say. I can't see where the words are that are in 1591 that provide the output for a lot of this that's here. I mean, we've agreed that the word trustee is used in a moral sense and not a strict legal sense as in trust law. That we went over in detail in the past. But the moral use of the word trustee is a general duty to do the right thing. It doesn't have... There's nowhere I read in 1591 that you must work with the IANA contract manager to ensure this. I mean, not that you wouldn't, but I don't see there's a specific literal requirement to do that. Yeah, of course you should ensure the security and stability of the CCTLD, but I don't see that that's written in 1591, and I think we should be hesitant at reconstructing or constructing new forms of words which themselves can then be interpreted and analyzed and reinterpreted. I just don't see where this comes from.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. I think the question or the obvious of that suggestion or your suggestion is the need to be quite explicit that you have duties or expectations as a CCTLD manager that exist out of your country and to the global internet community. I think Bernie's trying hard to make that point here, that this extends to more than just in country. Anyway, Bill has his hand raised, so Bill.
Yeah, I've always read this to mean that in a similar way to what Nigel has said, that this is a description of to minimize the monopolization of the product, so to speak, or even do away with it, and to have fair and equal treatment of everyone, and the trustee relationship describes that. Although I don't disagree with 623452 as a general concept, I don't see that it can be extracted from the language of RFC 1592. The trust relationship is one of responsibility and serving the community and not taking advantage. But it doesn't mean X and it doesn't mean Y, and in this case it doesn't mean Z. They have to provide mechanisms to allow for registrants and significantly interested parties to provide input. What it does mean is that the domain name must be available to be registered, and that's how you serve the community, by doing this service of registering the domain name and putting it into the zone and keeping the zone active and making the domain name system work. That's the service. I can't see how it goes anywhere beyond that based on the language in the RFC and as well on the concepts that were prevailing at the time, which was, you know, golly, we got to figure out how to get a name server working. We have to figure out how to get the zones in there right and make them secure and not be corruptible and make them, you know, propagate and so on and so forth. That's a difficult process, and it's a service. And again, I agree that the concept of the global internet community means that service has to be extended to the whole world and not just be in a closed-loop zone inside of a country. And I think that's the extent of the trusteeship on the global community as well. But again, we're all saying words like, I think. The language is not all that confusing. If we need to explicate it a little bit, I'm happy with that. But I think we are kind of overextending the meaning of the words to try and give them current meaning and make the words conceptually able to carry something, some kind of meanings that may help in the process of IANA administering the CCTLD relationship, but doesn't really, isn't necessarily something that the actual words of the RFC is saying.
Okay, I think good points. Thanks, Bill. I think, Bernie, we have some editing to do in this regard. Martin has his hand raised. So, Martin.
Thanks. I can certainly understand and sympathise with Bill's point. We're back in the over-engineering, over-identifying what words mean. However, I do have that sort of one bit of concern that if all we do is just restate that which is in 1591, then we haven't done anybody any service of interpretation. And so I do think that we have to give a little bit of thought as to exactly what terms like duty to serve the community might really mean. Just picking up on the 452, I think I would have concerns of saying, well, you have to provide mechanisms to allow for, but you do need to try and find some way of putting in some wording that actually mean it's the community's interpretation of what is absolutely necessary for serving them, rather than me deciding I have their best interests at heart in good old Victorian paternalist way for such definitions. So yes, some simplification, but I do think we do have to put in some thoughts and some ideas as to exactly what are the important issues at stake here.
Yes, thank you very much, Martin, for reminding us of our prime purpose here is to provide colour and depth to the policies. Not saying anything is not really doing that. I have Nigel on the list, but I think Bernie wants the floor for a moment. So firstly, Bernie, then Nigel.
Thank you, sir. I want to agree with Martin, or at least that was my understanding of what we're trying to do. We may not agree with what I've said there, which are things to get the discussion started, but I think the end product, whatever it is, whether it uses these suggestions or not, need to, as we have said always, provide color and depth. We can't simply requote the statement and say that's all it is. And then I think we would be failing in what we're trying to do. And I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I think that is what we have to do.
Okay. Thanks, Bernie. And Bill Simich is indicating agreement with that. And now we have Nigel and then Becky.
Yeah, as I said with the green tick, I do agree with what Martin has said. We must be cautious that we don't try and write horse under the picture, but that's true. But we must be very careful that we don't try and introduce the Victorian paternalism, which he quite rightly quotes, and say the IANA is the Victorian paternalist who turns around and says, well, you didn't consult your local internet community. The principle of subsidiarity applies here. It's the manager in relation to their local internet community that prescribes what your consultation mechanisms are, and they're different for different countries and cultures.
Yeah, fair point. Bernie, we've got a bit of work, a bit of editing to do here. Becky has her hand raised, so Becky.
Actually, I was just going to support what Martin and Nigel said, and I agree on the leaving some latitude for how you get this, how you get the input.
Okay, thanks, Becky. And Bernie.
Four square brackets, yes, sir.
Yeah. And a little bit of work to do there. Please continue.
62.346, the designated manager must be equitable to all groups in the domain that request domain names. One must remember that RFC 1591 was written in 94, or should be published in 94, and that at the time there was an expectation that the majority of registrants of the CCTLD would be from the country or territory. This is no longer the case for a number of CCTLDs. Additionally, there was an expectation that the CCTLD manager would be interacting directly with the registrant for the registration and management of domain names. This did not take into account the registrar registry business model, which is now prevalent in the CC space. A number of CCTLDs do have a policy that allows them to charge a different fee either based on the type of registrant in country or territory or not, registered business or not. Essentially, these are policy decisions which are made by the manager to meet the various requirements, including those of local community and legal systems, which could not be envisioned by RFC 1591 at the time of its publication. As such, it would seem reasonable to interpret this requirement in the context, in the current context, as the manager must publish its registration policies on the internet for anyone to consult, minimally in all the official languages of the country or territory, and apply these policies in an impartial manner. Nigel.
Well, I agree strongly with sub-point 5, although I would have probably written it differently. And for that reason, I propose complete deletion of sub-points 1 through 4.
Yeah, they were just there to support an argumentation.
I actually think they don't support it. I think they hinder it.
What I'm looking for is a conclusion, so if that makes everyone happy, I'm happy with that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Stephen's indicating agreement. And so is Cheryl. So I think we have a bit more editing to do there. Bernie. And I think Nigel's just forgotten to take his hand down, so please continue, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. Definitions. We are now moving off of 623 and now in 624. Definitions. Substantial. Merriam-Webster. Being largely but not wholly that which is specified. A substantial lie. Misbehavior, Oxford Dictionary, and I've gone to different sources trying to find things that seem to fit more in our context. The action of misbehaving, bad behavior. He had denied all sexual misbehavior. Misbehave, verb, of a person, especially a child, conduct oneself in a way that is acceptable to others, behave badly. So then I go from that to misbehavior could then be considered to be a failure to meet some of the non-DNS requirements of RFC 1591. Yes, we've got to fix the notion of DNS, but we could amend that to misbehavior could then be considered to be a failure to meet some of the requirements of RFC 1591. Let's get some questions.
Nigel's got his hand raised. Nigel.
Hi, thanks. Two things here. I think we need to do some work on misbehavior because I think there's an element of misbehavior that's not just a failure to meet prescribed requirements. So we will need to, and I think this will take more than one meeting to go into this and tease that out. But I have a violent objection to your definition of the word substantial, because if you take your definition of substantial and, let's say, your definition of misbehavior is approximately correct, and you put them together, what that means is that somebody who doesn't quite misbehave should lose their domain.
Well, that's not the intent.
No, but that's what I'm reading, being largely but not wholly that which is specified. I prefer the definitions which say of ample or considerable amount, quantity, size, of a corporal or material nature, of solid character or quality, basic or essential, fundamental. So substantial in this case means something that is, substantial misbehavior is something that is more than misbehavior, and perhaps much more.
Like a
willful refusal to correct misbehavior.
Then in those words, we'll be glad to use them.
All right, well, I thought I'd sent something along those lines many weeks ago, but I'm sure between us we can tease that out.
And just noting that Bill Simich is indicating his agreement with Nigel on that. Thank you, Nigel. Please continue, Bernie.
I can go off mute. So we've got to work on those definitions and what substantial misbehavior means. Inability or unwillingness of the incumbent manager to correct significant issues with respect to the requirements of RFC 1591 for managers and CCTLD. And we'll be working on that. 6262, the IANA contractor should develop and post the procedures for determining if the manager of a CCTLD is substantially misbehaving based on the work of the FOI working group. These procedures should be reviewed and approved by the CCNSO as it will be responsible for monitoring these. So let's take some points on 6262. And I think Martin's up there, sir.
Thanks. I was just wondering why we are turning to the IANA contractor to develop and post procedures for determining whether a manager is substantially misbehaving or not. It is a degree of interpretation. And I would actually suggest that it starts to become almost an impossible interpretation until you've got specific examples in front of you that you can then draw on. So I'm just feeling very, very uncomfortable with the idea of essentially passing the buck of getting a manual written and a manual that probably will not then have the answer to the specific question that's raised.
But you know, that was just sort of my feeling as this section was read, 60 was read.
Okay, thanks, Martin, and I note Nigel's indicating his agreement with your statement. It's quite a dangerous night when both Martin and Nigel start agreeing with each other on more than one occasion, I think. So noted. Bernie, please continue.
Okay, just talking to that point, I guess all we're trying to do here, as we've done with the other things, is to try to navigate the universe between interpreting policy and not writing procedures. So all I was trying to do here is telling people, you know, ahead of this, we've identified some points, we've talked about substantial misbehavior and what are some of the things that should be looked at, and over to you, Ayanna. And if it's going over to Ayanna, I agree with Martin, you know, there may not be some really black and white situations, but the point is, I think there is a requirement to document what you're going to be considering in the context of your procedures. So that's what we were looking at here under 626. Nigel.
I just have a point of order, actually, strangely enough. What time are we carrying on till today, Keith?
Another 17 minutes maximum.
Okay, I'm just wondering, because I think we're coming up to quite a large chunk, whether or not we can, instead of commencing the large chunk, find an appropriate time to draw a line and adjourn to a different to another occasion. That's a matter for you, of course.
I take your point. I was hoping we could get through the document in its entirety tonight, and you're right, we probably won't be able to. Benny, I think, is there anything else that we need to cover off in terms of this document tonight, or today?
I think we've got plenty of stuff to work on and talk on the list, so I would tend to agree with Nigel at this point. Probably everyone's getting pretty fatigued, and the next section is a heavy chunk, so I would be comfortable with saying we've done fairly well. Let's go back and get some work done and come back to it at the next meeting.
Okay. I'm not seeing any disagreement at all, so I think we will do exactly that. Thank you all for your input so far on the revocation document. And I think it's indicating that the approach is not unreasonable and just merely needs finessing along the way. We'll continue along that line. Okay, can we move to the next item on the agenda, and that's the item 5, the review of the working group work plan. This is a document that was also circulated. Opening up, this was a document produced by Bart, who isn't on the call today, I just wonder if everyone's had a chance to read the document, and are there any comments, or are we happy? Gosh, I'm hearing an echo of myself, so someone's not muted. Thank you, whoever that was. And are there any comments, or are we in agreement that this is our current work plan and that we're on target to complete our business within the time frames? Any comments? Any discussion? everyone's happy. I'm seeing some ticks appear, so yes. And I think most importantly, we'll refer this document on in a briefer form to the GAC so that they are aware of our current timeline as well. So thank you for that. The next item on the agenda was the IANA implementation of recommendations and a discussion of process. And I think we're going to run out of time to go into this tonight also. So Nigel had some very strong words to say about this on this. There's been no other discussion on this. But I would encourage people to respond on this, and we'll hold over for the next meeting, unless there's any dissent. Okay. Thank you all. And so item 7 on the agenda is FOI response to the GAC submission on the consent document, and Bill has kindly recirculated some comments via email on the list regarding the letter that we sent to the GAC. Bill, I just wonder if you want to speak to those comments.
Yeah, in the press of time, I believe, and I think relevant staff and the chairman were busy traveling to meetings in Asia. This letter was drafted and sent without, at least without my knowledge, and I suspect without being posted to the workgroup list. And there was a small but important sentence in the annex to the letter, which set off a few whistles and bells in my alarm system. And I have proposed changing a couple of words of that in order to make it consistent with how we've been describing RFC 1591 versus the GAC principles in the context of this working group, with the principles serving as guidelines and not as policy. And I think we've been consistent with that so far, and I feel uncomfortable suddenly changing that approach, and I would strongly urge that we modify the annex and merely send it as a substitute annex to the GAC, with the explanation that deference to the need to get the letter to them quickly hadn't been reviewed by the members of the working group, and assuming the working group concurs with my proposed changes or something like it, we would include that with a short note.
Okay. Firstly, I'll ask that my apologies be recorded for having stepped beyond the remit of the working group and sending the letter without first giving the working group the opportunity to review it. The question is really what remedial action we take, and Bill's suggestion is that we rewrite to the GAC, being more explicit. The question is there support for Bill's suggestion to rewrite to the GAC, or should we let sleeping dogs lie? So I'll invite a comment from the group. I'm seeing a tick from Stephen, but I don't know whether that's an indication of rewriting to the GAC or letting sleeping dogs fly. So I actually need a comment.
Maybe both.
Perhaps it's something we can discuss on list. I don't think there's any desperate rush for an answer, Bill, between now and the next meeting. So I see Nigel's saying he tends to leave well alone. Shall we invite further discussion on the list?
Yes, we can.
Certainly I'd at a minimum, I would recommend that we read into our records what the wording should have been, and so that any further dissection of the data later on leaves no question over what we actually really meant. Bill, I see you've got your hand raised, so Bill.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable solution. If the history and the documents that we compile and submit and are part of the complete documentation of this working group has the language similar to what I propose, that would be fine with me.
Okay, and we'll be writing undoubtedly to the GAC again soon over the next chapters. So having that wording on record probably is not inappropriate. So.
Yes, and in the future, if there are documents written like this, we need to be sure that they are reviewed by the working group in some way or another before they become officially submitted to groups like the GAC, because as we just discovered, it's a little hard to turn back the clock.
Sure. Yeah. Look, I'll take the slapping for that, Bill, and I don't want to be slapped again. Stephen, you have your hand raised. Stephen.
Keith, I just lost the thread here. Where we stand with this, are we now drafting a short note back to the GAC saying, clarifying that particular sentence in the appendix? Or are we just adding this into our record and letting it go?
I think Bill's indicating an acceptance that we should add this into our record. So I think a note castigating me for acting without support and what...
Flogging of the chairman was duly noted.
And noting what the wording should have been is probably what Bill was quite happy with, I think. Not wanting to put the words in Bill's mouth, but
that works for me.
Is that correct, Bill? Yes, he's indicating a tick. Okay. Thank you, Stephen, I'm assuming you just haven't taken your hand down. So unless there's any other questions or comments in that regard, I'll work on some wording to satisfy item 7 on the agenda. Our next meeting is not until the 3rd of May, so it'll give us a bit of time to... work through the redraft of revocation, and I think if you could note in your diaries that will also be a two-hour call because we'll have a substantial amount to get through. And unless there's any other comments under general business, I'm not hearing anything else, I'll then declare the meeting closed and thank you all for your participation. And I have to say, this meeting in particular, conduct of all participants has been exemplary and has allowed us to make some really good progress in the best possible manners. And it's been a pleasure to chair. Thank you all. I don't know whose dog's barking, but it's obviously hungry. So thank you all, and go and feed the dog.
Bye.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, Keith.
Bye.
Go back to bed.
Bye.
Keith, can you hold on for a minute? Cheryl here.
Yeah, sure, Cheryl.
When the recording stops.
There's good night.
Good night.